This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, I'm Julian Morrow. Welcome to the Roundtable.
The Australian people have voted for change. We can shape change more effectively if we seek to unite people on that journey of change. Together, we can end the climate wars. Together, we can take advantage of the opportunity for Australia to be a renewable energy superpower.
Well, Scott Morrison still believes in miracles, but the electoral gods did not deliver him a second one in the poll to elect members of the 47th Parliament of Australia. We heard there Labor leader Anthony Albanese claiming victory, and on the morning after the election, it's clear he will be our next Prime Minister. It may not be a miracle, but the story of Anthony Albanese's journey from a childhood in a Housing Commission flat to becoming our 31st Prime Minister is a compelling one, although it's not yet clear if Labor will form a majority government or if they'll govern with the support or some combination of support from a hugely expanded and teal-tinged crossbench. So on the roundtable today, we will pore over the teal-coloured entrails of the federal election. And joining us around the roundtable, we have Anne Tiernan, Professor of Politics and Pro-Vice-Chancellor at Griffith University in Queensland. Anne may not have written the book on Australian politics, but did co-edit the Oxford Handbook of Australian Politics. Welcome, Anne.
Morning, Julian.
Great to have you. Greg Sheridan is the Australian's longtime foreign editor. His most recent book is Christians, The Urgent Case for Jesus in Our World. Welcome to you also, Greg Sheridan.
Good morning, Julian.
Great to have you too back on the roundtable, as it is also great to have back former Indi independent Cathy McGowan, who was elected twice to the seat that was formerly held by the Liberal Party's Sophie Mirabella, and that certainly is a trend which continued in spades last night. Cathy handed on the independent baton to the current MP for Indi, Helen Haynes, who the ABC has holding Indi with a swing of 8.6%. To her. Welcome back, Cathy.
Good morning, and hello, Anne and Greg. Lovely to share the space with you.
It's a great group around our roundtable today. The people have delivered their verdict. I'd like to invite each of you now to deliver your verdict. Could you just give us a little outline of your main takeaways from the federal election of 2022? We'll start with you, Cathy McGowan.
So all power to community, that's what I want to talk about. That democracy is not a spectator sport, that communities all around the country have dived in and engaged and had spectacular results. And my phone is just buzzing this morning with at least 23 communities saying, "Ha, we've done something amazing."
Yeah. Thanks very much for that, Cathy. Obviously, we will dissect the teal independent wave in our roundtable. And Tiernan, over to you. What's your big takeaway?
Yeah, Julian, I agree with Cathy. I think, climate action, integrity, equality and community, that's what Australians voted for last night. That's what they were asking the government for and weren't able to make Scott Morrison hear it. And in many ways, it's a return to our collective inclusive essence. And I'm just really pleased. I had an email from a colleague in the US this morning to say, wow, you know, the sort of transcendence of post-truth politics and hyper-partisan, really cynical politics is really pleasing to see. They're quite envious.
Right. Very interesting. Greg Sheridan, what's your big takeaway from last night?
Well, I think you've got to pause for a moment and give wonderful congratulations to Anthony Albanese and to the Teals. Fantastic democratic achievement on both parts. I always thought it was a very poor campaign, however, from the two main parties. I didn't think either of them offered any policy narrative, and I do think that opened up the ground for the independents. I also think it's a tremendous challenge to the independents now that they're going to have to be responsible partners in coherent government.
We can do that well, Greg. We know yes. About that.
Well, we've never had a parliament like this before, and for a long time now, it's been impossible for a government to have the numbers in the Senate. And the Teals have given us no indication of any broader policies beyond Climate Change and the Integrity Commission. And I'd actually think it's very difficult. You see in European parliaments this kind of result all the time, and often you get 12 or 18 months where you have no government, and it's very hard for a government to run a coherent program. But I don't want to be the skunk at the party on the day we're all celebrating. So well done to all the Teal independents who won.
Can I just make a point about the use of the word Teal? Everyone's been calling them teal, but look, we've got to call them community independents. Mm. There's all sorts of colours involved. They're not all that colour. Like Kylie Tink, just for example, is pink. And around the country, they've all got different colours. They're independents. You can't group them together. It's a really big mistake to think they're going to be the same. So if we could please call them community independents, because they've come from their communities, and they might share those two or three, some of them do, but there's a huge diversity of issues that are actually being addressed. So if you, I know I've got an uphill battle.
I was going to say, point noted, Cathy. I can't guarantee that I might not say the word teal in the next half hour.
The other really critical point that I wanted to make, though, is, if they were representing any ideology other than the environment, we would be having a big discussion today about the role of big money in politics, because the Climate 200, the big billionaire who funded them, I think they're a very populist movement, and populism is almost always funded by white billionaires. And if they feel warm and cuddly.
It's funny because we see it as a gendered movement.
We would think this was money politics.
All right. Yeah. So let's just pause for a second. And Tina, if I could come to you now, let's dissect, if we can, exactly what the result is in terms of the crossbenches and what it will mean for Labor governing at the moment. We don't have a definitive answer, but it is possible, isn't it, that Labor might be able to rule either in its own right or perhaps only through an arrangement for supply with just the Greens, because the Greens had a great night, particularly in your state of Queensland last night.
Yeah, that's right, Julian, a very surprising result but a very interesting result in those seats for the Greens in Brisbane. Look, I think it's actually more likely that if Labor forms a minority government that it will be working with the crossbenchers en masse. I think there's actually some residual issues about the Greens from the previous experience of 2010 that might make Anthony Albanese a bit careful about some of those interactions. But look, you know, I'm just really interested in the sense that majoritarianism is the only way that anything can work. It's been the way our system has worked, but our community is diverse and it's diversifying, and that's what we saw last night. So, you know, it's still possible, and we've got a long way to go in counting the postal and pre-polls, and, you know, there'll be some recounts given the difficulties that we could see poor Anthony Green having last night with who was coming second. So, you know, a long way to go, but that extraordinary result in Western Australia, even though Labor's lost some key seats and some important, you know, prospective front benches, that result in Western Australia means that hope still looms that it could form majority government, you know, slim majority government. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? It works very well in New Zealand, where you have to govern from the centre because power can't, you know, accrue so strongly to the one party. So I think this is a very interesting reshaping of our politics. And I think one of the most interesting things will be whether the media can cope with it in terms of something that the rest of the country has been observing for some time about the political parties. People punished the political parties that they see as broken. And I'm, you know, I do agree with Greg that it was, you know, a very interesting campaign, not a great campaign, but actually I think the ideological differences between the two major parties were starker than, you know, has been widely reported.
It's interesting, though, that the vote for the major parties was at a historical low, and even though Labor is returning to power, their primary vote was lower than it was in 2019. When we spoke on the roundtable a few weeks ago with Cathy McGowan, I noted the fact that while there was a surge of votes for independence as a sort of historical trend, it had sort of stabilised a little bit, but there does seem to have been a major increase last night in the non-major party vote. Cathy McGowan, do you think that is a part of the electoral cycle or a permanent change in our politics?
Mm. So I just wanted to, I'm very happy to talk about that, but I just want to reinforce what Anne's just said about the mainstream media really needs to pay some attention to what's going on and not just really do some proper journalism. Because to answer your question, Julian, I'm going to talk about what happened in Indi. So I was on the polls all day yesterday. As you said, Helen Haynes increased her majority by 8.6%. Like, she actually did. The people want her. And it's the fourth election that we've had the community, this country community, choose an independent. So what actually is going on here? And I think there's just some very important things that happen that play out for the country. And, Greg, it's got nothing to do with money. It's got everything to do with policy. So, for example, as you know, Helen Haynes has been taking the lead on integrity. She's been taking the lead on a community energy power plan. Issues that are incredibly important in this electorate. She campaigned on them, she won on them, and she's going to deliver on them. And what I saw that happened in Indi is that the Liberal Party and the National Party didn't do any work locally on those issues. All they did was played out of Melbourne, mainstream, you know, blah, blah, blah stuff that didn't land. And then they ran a negative campaign against Helen, her voting record. They didn't engage in the policies that the community really want to talk about. And it's profound that not only has their vote gone down, I think in Indi, the Greens got more votes than the National Party. So look at that. But it was to me, as I was talking to people on pre-poll yesterday and polling yesterday and pre-polling, people want to talk about issues. They actually want a government that's they want their member of parliament to actually represent them. And I think there's been a huge failure of representation, and it plays out in the issues. But what really is happening, and I think in the community independents where they've been running, they're running because they're not being represented. And they see that if they do engage this sort of dive into democracy and engage, then you get a representative who's actually going to represent you and not represent your party. So I think there's just magic happening in that space that can only be good for the country.
Thanks very much, Cathy McGowan. Greg Sheridan, that community representation that Cathy referred to does seem to have pretty solidly wiped out the moderates in the Liberal Party. What do you think the implications of last night's result are for the Federal Liberal Party?
Well, I agree with most of what Cathy said, but I don't agree at all that the Teals didn't benefit from immense amounts of money. They were enormous quantities of money. I mean, they outspent the big parties in most of the electorates. They spent millions and millions of dollars per electorate. So this is a power play by a billionaire using a particular sentiment of the moment. However, I nonetheless agree with Cathy that the major parties failed at two levels, I think. First of all, they didn't project a positive policy narrative. Now, I really admire Albanese. I think he's a very fine human being. But it is very difficult to come into government with less than a third of the country voting for you, and your primary vote going down, and that's your first election. Now, that doesn't mean he's not going to succeed. What does it mean for the Liberal Party? Now, one of the mistakes both parties have made, I think, and so I hope Cathy thinks this is a sort of a reinforcement of what she's saying. I think both major parties have degraded their own internal democracy. In New South Wales, the Prime Minister chose 12 of the candidates. In Victoria, the Labor Party has been suspended, in effect, since the branch stacking exercise of a few years back, and so there has been no internal democracy pre-selection. Now, you're much more likely to get a local champion who really connects with the local community if you have a local pre-selection. Now, I also admire Christina Keneally, but plainly, you can't just foist someone on a community and then expect that the community is going to fall into line.
Yes.
So I do agree with Cathy. There's been, so both parties have to go back to, I think, to internal democracy and to a much stronger policy narrative.
Yeah, that's really interesting, the degrading of the internal democracy of the major parties. Antinen, would you agree with Greg's comments there? And what do you think the implications of Christina Keneally's apparent defeat are?
Yeah, I really do agree with Greg on that point. And there's a kind of a more important point that goes with it as well, which is the extraordinary loss of party membership, centralisation and dominance by the professional class is profoundly alienating for communities. But moreover, they cannot mobilise volunteers or people on booths. And so the big result that you saw in the seat of Griffith here, still pending, where the Greens look like they might pick up that seat, or even in Ryan, you know, a very strong Liberal stronghold historically, are about people being able to mobilise volunteers and get out to do things. And this is what the community independents have also done, tapped people's energy and engagement in politics. And that makes a difference, because people don't trust centralised, professionalised spin and all that stuff. What they want to do is talk to people about the issues that resonate with them. So, you know, I mean, I think it's very unfortunate that Christina Keneally as a talent is lost to the parliament. But on the other hand, it's the outcome of just exactly what Greg has described, which is, you know, riding roughshod over local pre-selections. Why would you be a member of a political party when you can't influence policy, when you can't influence pre-selection? I think it's a really serious, you know, profound self-examination. But historically, they've never been very good at doing that, and that's why the parties are where they are.
Cathy McGowan in Indi, I suppose there wasn't really a need for that sort of community pre-selection process with Helen Haynes already the incumbent. But do you think that we'll see more of this in more seats in the next federal election, or has the sort of the independent wave maxed out at these pretty high, you know, historically high numbers?
Well, just a couple of things. That all these community independents that I've been working with have come, they're community independents because they've come from their community. There's also a number of standalone independents that ran who don't have that community backing. So they're in a different category in my head. But the community independents, and Helen in particular, has come through the community. Yeah. And then she reports back to the community. So she's able to get, like, I think there was 1,500 of us out yesterday in northeast Victoria doing our stuff, and there was like 2,000 in Kooyong. So I think that works. But I don't know the what next. But I think one of the really important things now is these community independents have to actually show that they deliver for the community. So they've put out the hope and they've had good process of selection and engagement. And now I think the next major thing is, okay, how are we going to we're going to be watching, a bit like what Zali Steggall does in Sydney. Like when I was in Sydney, people just loved her ability to engage her community with what was happening in Parliament and her regular town halls and her really informative newsletters that went out and her voting procedure. So I think that's the next bit. Can we, and Greg, again, it's a job for the mainstream media to actually be reporting on the diversity of ways that these really clever people who've had experience in communication in large organisations now continue to engage and build the community around politics outside the party structure. So I think if they can do that well, and watching what Andrew Wilkie, like, God help me, Andrew Wilkie, he gets 70% of the vote in Clark. Like, people love him. And Rebecca Sharkey over in Mayo, Helen in Indi, Zali just waltzed it in. So my sense is that once you get in there and you deliver for your community and you start representing, people just love it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's interesting.
Continue to engage.
Yeah, go on, Greg.
Well, Cathy, I think that what you're saying is undeniable. It's plainly true. Nobody could deny democracy. These people have got a fabulous vote. So, as I say, I don't want to be the skunk at the party, but it's our job in the media to look at things that can possibly go wrong. So let me just offer you a couple of thoughts. One is, independents up till now have had a nice position once they get elected, because they're not responsible for anything the government does that people don't like, and they can associate themselves with anything that is popular. Now, that I'm not gainsaying their community consequence, but it is a different thing to be responsible for executive government. So if you are saying, yes,
just stop there for a sec, Greg? That's right, because they're not in government. So when I was when I was an independent, I was always on the crossbench. I was never in opposition. And my job, and I said it to the community, is to make government better. I'm not in government, but I'm there representing this community like so making it better.
That's the
so
point
yeah, everyone
that's
understood
the point
that.
Of,
although
yeah,
I think
the,
it would be said, sorry, Greg, I think it could be said certainly that after the 2017 federal election that the independents who were part of that power-sharing arrangement with the Labor Party did end up being held responsible for those decisions.
Yeah, so that's my exact point, Julian. Not everyone in Parliament cannot be in government. So if the independent trend goes on and you've got a majority of people who are independents, somebody has got to take responsibility for tawdry, tedious things like the budget and national defence, and they've got to trade
but
off
I
one thing
think
against
these
another.
People are these people are really...
So am I allowed to just finish a single sentence?
We'll just finish this one, Greg, and then we'll go on.
Yeah. So the idea of a Westminster government is that a party or coalition produces a coherent program which involves inevitably necessary trade-offs and compromises. You can't pay for this because you do pay for that. Now, the independents up till now have been in a sweet position where they can simply say, we'll support everything that's popular, we'll oppose everything that's unpopular. They can ask for things for their own electorate, which if a government member did it would be regarded as corrupt, but for an independent is regarded as core business. Now, if they are going to be 18, 20, 25 people in Parliament, they're going to have to effectively be part of executive government. And the final thing is, one election does not make a permanent political situation.
Indeed,
so
yeah. And I think
what we're seeing,
Greg,
is a lot of instability in international elections.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, I'll throw back to Anne Tiernan for her comments on that, and in particular how the balance of power will play out. One thing that was noted last night in the election night coverage was that Anthony Albanese was the person who was responsible for dealing with the crossbench during the Gillard government. Is quite experienced, if nothing else, in those matters. How do you see the balance of power politics playing out in this new parliament?
Julian, I think we'll hear a lot of Westminster bandied around in the next week or 10 days, and I do encourage people to reflect more critically on that than just some of what we've heard. Anthony Albanese is very experienced at that, as you say, from the 2010 to 13 minority parliament. But he said two things at his press club speech on Wednesday that he repeated last night. It's going to be really important. The what is really important, but the how is really important. And I think, I think that's been sort of underreported and underanalyzed in terms of he's talking about discipline and coherence in the way that the government will go about doing things, proper processes. I hope proper cabinet processes, which we haven't seen for a really long time. I hope proper legislative and deliberative processes that we haven't seen for a very long time. And I think this is where, in a bit in the way that we saw with the Federation during the pandemic, where you have power, automatic stabilisers, I think Catherine Murphy called them yesterday, a few constraints so that you have to negotiate and you have to slow down and you have to really consider what is being legislated or appropriated or granted, in the case of some of the spending that we've seen over the last period of time. So I actually think he'll be well placed to handle that. And I think the government, if he forms government, will have an agenda. And I think confidence and supply is what will be being sought from the crossbench, and then negotiation around key priorities. I think it'll work exactly that way. And all the, catastrophizing that you might hear otherwise, I think is a bit overblown.
Thanks very much, Anne. And thanks very much also for picking me up on the incorrect dates of the Gillard government there. But that, obviously a seminal experience in terms of Labor minority government. On the roundtable, we're talking about the fallout from the 2022 federal election, and picking up on Greg Sheridan's comments about the sort of lack of a coherent set of policies and a narrative in the federal campaigns. It certainly did seem in Anthony Albanese's victory speech last night that there is a very big policy agenda on the horizon, climate change, but also in particular a very clear commitment to implementing the Uluru Statement from the Heart in full and introducing a National Integrity Commission. Cathy McGowan, do you think that we will see constitutional recognition for Indigenous people in this next term of Parliament and a National Integrity Commission with teeth?
Well, I'm not in a position to really comment. I mean, I heard that speech last night too, and I noted the member for Hasluck who's been the current Aboriginal Affairs Minister, lost his seat.
Yes.
So I'll just, you know, put my commiserations out there. But I think the government will govern. But my want is that they engage with communities, and they do it like what I've been talking about, and what what we've acknowledged is that we actually have to get democracy working well in the parties, in the communities, in our schools, dare I say, because there was no shortage of young people coming up to me yesterday and saying, now, how does this really work? But I think that to me is the opportunity, and out of that comes the representation that the country wants. And as a nation, we grow into this space of, it's sort of picking up what you're saying, Greg, we grow into the space of responsibility for the nation. And who we are and how we as a nation work together. It's not just Parliament. Democracy is on all the levels that we work. And I think we've forgotten that for a long time. We've given power away to a small elite, whether, again, as you say, Greg, to people with money or people with, you know, mining influence or whatever they were doing. And I want to see, you know, the next 20 years of Australia is us really grasping democracy at all its forms and at all its levels, and producing a country that's really proud of our vote and our engagement and our ability to work together. And I heard it this morning, last night watching it on TV, it was this sense that we need to be able, oh, it was Tanya Plibersek, we need to be much, much better at disagreeing substantially, but coming out of disagreement to find a better solution. And that's, again, I'm going to finish off with what I'm saying. I've been seeing that in Indi. We moved from people hating talking about politics because it was so polarised, and now we've come into a place where really good political discussion happens in a much more meaningful way, and people are growing into that space that's their responsibility. So I think, Greg, if we could do that at the local level, at the community level, and we can do it around, you know, Aboriginal recognition if we want, our parliaments will be much, much better at doing those very tricky things that you're talking about, is solving problems collectively.
Thanks very much. Cathy, we've only got a couple of minutes left, so I'll come for a final comment to Anne and then Greg. Anne, do you think we will see major institutional change in terms of a National Integrity Commission and then constitutional recognition?
Well, those are the two commitments, and Albanese has said that those would be delivered. Well, certainly the legislation for an integrity commission would be this year. I just wanted to pick up something that Cathy said, Julian. I think those tools of active citizenship and the habits of active citizenship are what we have seen and what we'll continue to see. And I think I'm hugely encouraged by that as a political scientist. But I think, you know, Anthony Albanese has been very clear about the voice to Parliament and has made that, you know, a real centrepiece. And I would have thought that for many on the crossbench, they'd share that aspiration.
Yes.
And that's necessarily an engaged process that's going to happen, you know, across this diverse and diversifying nation, as we've seen overnight, because the truth-telling processes will need to happen, in local places.
Yes.
So I think we'll see a much more decentralised approach than the big trend centralisation that we've seen over the last 40 years.
Thanks very much, Anne. And we've really only got about 30 seconds left, Greg Sheridan. Do you think something like implementing the Uluru Statement is something that could attract bipartisan support in this next parliament?
I think you'll definitely get an integrity commission, but this moment that we've had, and I do want to celebrate it. I admire all the Teal independents for what they've done, and I certainly think Anthony Albanese deserves his moment in victory, but that doesn't guarantee the end of conflict. You know, Malcolm Turnbull was very much against a constitutionally recognised voice because he said it introduced two categories of Australian citizens. When anybody wins an election, they want everyone else to be bipartisan in the interests of their program. Now, I don't think that this means conflict is over,
yes.
But I do think Cathy's right, we're going to have to evolve into making this kind of parliament work.
And we are going to have to end our roundtable discussion there. Thanks very much to all our participants, Anne Tiernan, Greg Sheridan and Cathy McGowan. Thanks to you all.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
Thanks very much, Julian.
Our roundtable guests were Anne Tiernan, Professor of Politics and Pro-Vice Chancellor at Griffith University in Queensland, Greg Sheridan, the Australian's foreign editor, and Cathy McGowan, former independent MP for Indi. I'm Julian Morrow. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.